Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
Hey, this is Aaron Greger.
And this is Sia Yasotornra.
And we're excited to present this episode to you, which is our latest live recording of our Women in Tech Leadership series. Now, before we get into who Angela is and just a little intro on her, we want to make sure you're going to be at the next one. So, Sia, when is it? June 4th. June 4th. We've got, we're going to be here again at City Central, 5:30. Who are we talking to, Miss Sia?
We will be talking to Kristen Twining. She is the VP of Inside Sales over at Hewlett Packard Enterprise.
Yes. So very excited to talk to her. This last one was absolutely incredible. We'll intro Angela, but 5:30, innovationcalling.com to grab your tickets, join us, and let's talk about Angela for this episode right now that you're about to listen to.
Yeah. So Angela Tickner, I actually met her at an event that Cisco actually had put on, and she was such a dynamic speaker. Her history is amazing. So talk about someone that had to carve her own path in life. She went from graduating college and working her way through journalism degree to where she's at today at Salesforce, where she is a regional VP. She's just gotten another promotion, if you will. And she's now managing executive accounts here in the Dallas area. So huge, good move for her. So Without further ado, guys, I am so excited and pleased to present Angela Tickner, Salesforce, for our evening.
All right. So welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. And we are live once again for our Women in Tech Leadership series. Sia, I'm going to give it to you to do our quick intro tonight.
Yes, we have the VP, regional VP at Salesforce, Angela Tickner. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
This is going to be a good story. Angela was kind enough to send us kind of a
novel.
Well, no, but I mean,
I have to be prepared, okay?
You'll understand this when she says I have to be prepared. She literally sent us like a 2-page email about her history. I kind of gave her topics. I'm like, hey, we might touch on this. And next thing I got back was like pages and pages. I'm like, ooh.
But it is interesting. We're like, this is juicy and good. So yeah, we love it.
Because of your response, actually, we actually changed up what we were going to focus on. So yeah. Because of that, Angela, thank you so much for joining us. First off, Buffalo, New York.
Yeah.
So how do you like the winters in Texas versus Buffalo?
I like it a lot. I like it a lot better. When I was younger, in my 20s, I brought a boyfriend back to Buffalo, and it was snowing really hard. And he said, well, nobody's going to go out in this weather. And I said, this is the weather every day here. So everybody's going out.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, I don't think Texans understand that, you know, when it's like 6-foot snow pile.
Yeah, we get one little patch of ice and nobody leaves the house here. So it was actually one of my memories as a child was the blizzard of 73. And my grandfather, one of my first memories, was he made in the backyard a maze for us to walk through. So it's very nice to... That's a good memory as a child, having all the fun with the snow, but having to deal with that on a day-to-day basis is not something that interests me at all.
So I want to go into how you were raised, because usually, you know, we don't want to start like from baby, but it was interesting your perspective. You were raised from a religious, women were not going to be in tech, we're not going to be working, you know, for a company like Salesforce, right? For how were you raised? Can you talk a little bit about the... how you were brought up and the drive and what was in you to really change that, and you wanted to do a lot more?
Yeah. So, and as I was telling you guys the other day, I grew up in Buffalo, New York, but my parents got a divorce when I was in high school, and we moved to a really small rural town in Oklahoma. And it was a complete cultural shock to be in the Bible Belt.
sorry, coffee. Like,
I'm sorry to get you so choked up this early in the discussion. You
know, see, it's not like the Bible Belt.
I'm just, you know, really provoking this positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's start that one over. Just
a side note.
You don't know how much it provokes tears. I almost moved to Rochester.
Oh, I'm sorry.
At one point in my life, and you're making me realize what a great decision it was.
All right, so we'll start a little bit. Just talk a little bit about parents divorcing, Bible Belt, and that.
Yeah,
that
so when I was in high school, which is, you know, in your development years, I moved from Buffalo, New York to a small rural town in Oklahoma. And it was a good experience because it was a total cultural shock. But the culture growing up there, it was very religious focused. And, you know, the emphasis for young women was really about finding a husband. And, you know, the gateway to college was really that was where you found the right husband and started your family. And, you know, being raised by a single mom, she didn't have the means to put us through college. So we had to figure that out ourselves. And I definitely didn't want to be in a situation where, you know, I was, you know, going down the path of not going to college and getting married. So I moved to Dallas, and it was right in the middle of the telecom boom. And so I moved with some friends, and I wanted to get creative about, you know, how was I gonna, I didn't know really what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to go to college. So I ended up getting a job at a telecom startup company that was growing just like wildfire at the time. And I took a job as the receptionist because they paid for college. If you got an A, they paid 100%, a B, 90%, so on and so forth. So my idea was that I do this and I can do my homework during the day. Well, I ended up just being so good at networking with the people that came in the door that they would go, you know, if it was somebody from purchasing or somebody that was meeting for IT, think about anybody who walks through the door in a corporation. They would always, you know, sing my praises to whoever the leader was that they were working with. So within 3 months, I had the IT department, the procurement department, the marketing department, and some of the executives all vying for me to move and be part of their team. So my options were open. The company, just in a year that I was there, grew from 100 to like 300 people. So we were just growing like gangbusters. And I ended up taking a job as the assistant in marketing and was so valuable in that capacity that I ended up replacing the person who was running PR and spent the next 3 years of my life where I thought I was going to be sitting at the front desk doing my homework. I was on an airplane to Rome and San Francisco and New Orleans and Mexico City and really all of these really cool places between the age of 19 to 21. On the corporate account, managing PR. And, you know, my aha moment in thinking back of how did I put myself in that position was that there were a ton of really brilliant engineers that worked at the company, and they were so smart that it was very difficult a lot of times for me to understand what exactly that they were talking about. So I got really good at taking notes and really then taking what they were saying and sort of translating it back and saying, okay, did you mean this and that? Did you mean that? And how do we turn this into something that is really audience friendly and something that makes what you're saying, the brilliant things that you're saying, into something that's marketable that a layman can understand? And so when I left there 3 years later, they had went IPO, and I, went to another startup company that failed and, you know, learned a lot of lessons there. Was there anything specific you wanted me to go into there?
Well, I think it's interesting because you go to a company that is a relatively startup, goes IPO. And then you go to a startup,
yep,
and it failed. What skills did you take with you and you learned, and how did you apply it? Because after that startup failure experience, you went to Salesforce, right?
Yeah, another company later. But yeah, I leapfrogged into it. So, I mean, I think what I learned from that experience, the startup I went to had really great technology. And I got to really run my own show, probably like a lot of entrepreneurs in there, you know, got to really call my own shots and, you know, work directly with the CEO of that company. You know, I don't think that startups are really that much different than larger companies because you need to be dynamic no matter what you do. As we were talking about earlier, you know, it's really important to have a growth mindset and always be a constant learner. That's why I think these podcasts are so great, because I download these on the plane and it's how I really, you know, internalize a lot of information from other people. So just being dynamic and being that lifelong learner and always trying to do not just one job, but try to do two jobs no matter what your role is, so that if something falls short, you always have something else to fall back on. If the tides shift, you know, what are you doing in your day-to-day job, but what are you passionate about, and really focusing on that too. Diversity, inclusion, something that I'm very passionate about, having, you know, been raised in a, you know, having that experience of being in a rural community and then being plopped into an environment where it was 99% men and trying to, you know, work my way through that. But, you know, when the startup failed, luckily I had something to fall back on. I was a thousandaire from the IPO, and I took that money and I went and put myself through school to finish up at SMU. And what I learned looking back from that experience is that one of the things I'm always really good at is knowing what the rules are and then understanding when to follow the rules, when to make the rules work for you, and when to change the game. So I discovered in that process that, first of all, if you have a, I think at the time it was a 3.67 transferring in from another school, you can go half price. Oh, and wow. Then, if you take 15 hours or 21 hours, you can, it's the same cost. And if an instructor cancels a course, you can go ask for a refund. So I became really creative on how I was going to use my time and work within those parameters so that I could get out as quickly as I could and begin earning the salary that I had previously. So, you know, throughout that process, you know, I was having this discussion with someone the other day when one of the first papers I wrote, the teacher gave me a B minus, and I was like, well, why do I have a B minus on this? I'm not a B minus student. And she said, well, you know, the content was great. You didn't have any grammar errors, but you didn't follow the right font. You didn't have the right margins and all that. So I corrected that. That's, you know, very easy to correct. And then the next semester, I had a bad headache before a class, but I wanted to find out how I did on the test. And I walked into my professor's office and I said, hey, you know, I want to know how I did on that test because, you know, I didn't really feel that good about it. And she said, don't worry. You know, most of the people, there were only three people that did well on the test. And most people, some of the people had like a 29. So we're just going to throw this out. So I was like, okay, well, how did I do? And she looked at me, she goes, oh, you're the one that got 103 on the test. She said, how did you do that? And I was like, well, and I remember taking that test like very specifically. And I remember looking up and everybody was leaving. And I was like, but I'm not done yet. Like, I'm not even halfway through this. How is everybody leaving? And I'm not even done yet. Like, I really had felt like I had failed. And so from there, she said, hey, I've got a job for you. I want you to go. Somebody asked me to take this assignment, and I want you to go be an investigative reporter for one of the nearby local papers, because they want to investigate a public utility that is operating against the Texas Constitution. So I said, okay, well, you know, I'm taking 21 hours. If I do that, will you give me 3 hours credit instead of taking a class? So she's like, oh, you're always negotiating, but okay.
And so it's good, I said, okay. It's good, yeah.
So how much do you think that they would pay me? And she said $10, $12 an hour. And I went home and I thought, okay, if I do this, it might delay me and I'll have to take summer classes to meet my goal of when I want to get done. So do I really want to do this in a time versus value analysis? And so I was like, what can it hurt to go talk to him? So I went and talked to him and I met with the publisher and he said, you know, we had our conversation. And first of all, when I walked in, he, you know, looked at me like I really needed to be behind the Clinique makeup counter, you know? Ugh. And, you know, so like shock, like that I was the one coming to do this project for him. And at the end of the conversation, he said, well, you know, what do you think? Can you do it? And I was like, yeah, I think it's going to be about 1,000 hours. And my rate's $25 an hour, and I'm going to need half of it up front.
Nice.
Because I was just trying to make it where it just wasn't even worth their while to have me do it. Because I didn't need the money, right? So I just went in it like I had nothing to lose. And he said, okay. And so he was quite proud of himself, you know, going around scaring all the city officials that he was paying this shark to do this reporting for him. And she was making more money than he was making. And he wanted to make sure he let everybody know that. So I ended up doing that. And then, you know, I graduated that semester first in my class. And, you know, they offered me a job for $17,000 a year. And I was like, that's not even going to get me the gas to get there. So I called my boss that was running the startup that had went down under. And he actually was restarting up the company. And so even though he didn't really have a role for me, he said that, you know, that he wouldn't have been able to make the company work as long as it did previously. So he kind of felt out of obligation. He gave me a job. And I went in there for a little bit and I tried to make it work, but it just wasn't moving, that fast moving environment that I really wanted to be on. I was, you know, I was just searching around, doing some research on our partners, and I was applying for, or I thought I was applying for a job for Tekelec. I don't know if you guys know who that is.
I know
the
them.
Switch manufacturer.
Yeah.
But I ended up taking a role at one of their subsidiaries, working for a woman named Debbie May, who has the patent for workforce management software. And she was a great mentor for me over the next 7 years. And I held a lot of different roles in her marketing organization and took on a lot of different projects. And she was famous for giving me opportunities, which really meant I need you to do something that nobody else is willing to take on. So one day I went into her office and she said she had an opportunity for me. And she asked me to lead her sales operations organization. And she wanted me to, which entailed pricing, RFP management, forecasting, you know, writing proposals. And I looked at her and I said, you do realize that I avoided every math class in college, right? She goes, you don't have to be a math wizard because I know I've observed what you're good at. Every time I give you something to do, it gets done. It gets done on time. And what you're really good at is making sure that the sales team does not screw it up. So I went in and I took over her sales operations function and got it so operationally executed so well that when we got acquired, I ended up running the global organization for the parent company. And from there, I ran the Salesforce implementation. And even though I did not know anything about pricing, I quickly found all of the errors and games that were being played. And I put that into a CPQ tool in the Salesforce app. And I think it's something that they still run today, which is kind of scary. But so I took that experience. And then one of the partners that I was working with had another opportunity for me. So I moved to another advertising firm, large national advertising firm, and ran sales enablement for them, where I rolled out Salesforce. After rolling it out globally for my former company, I rolled it out to 28 markets. And so I was about 35 then, and just had my, I went on maternity leave and I had my second child, and I came back and my boss was rationalizing my time off. And he said, well, you know, we're really generous with you on your maternity leave. We gave you 10 weeks. You know, hey, I had just had a C-section and, by the way, almost died. So to me, that didn't feel very generous. So I was like, okay, this is not the environment for me. And a lot of the work that I was doing prior to maternity leave. I came back and had kind of been passed out, and I wasn't doing anything that I really felt like was that strategic. But when I was on maternity leave, one of my friends said, "You're not allowed to go back until you read the book Lean In." And I read that book, and I got back, and I, you know, that just played in my head. And I said, you know, if I'm going to be working, I'm going to be challenged, and I'm just going to lean into this situation. And I've built a strong network in the Salesforce ecosystem with the work that I've been doing, and I'm going to go work for Salesforce. And so that's what I did.
Can I stop you and ask about what it, like you said, you leaned in, you took on more challenges. What else about that book really changed your perspective on corporate?
You know, it really, I don't think it really changed my perspective on corporate, but it changed my perspective on family and how I choose the relationships that I have.
Okay.
So, for example, you know, part of my story is I'm a cancer survivor. My marriage did not make the leap. But the way that I've chose my partner that I have now, because, you know, one of the things that I realized that is that you have to be very intentional in diversity. Inclusion is great for us all to talk about, but it really starts with our kids and how they're raised. And I realized at Thanksgiving, 1 year that I was really putting a lot of pressure on my niece to help in the kitchen. And my nephew was in there watching football. And I was like, no, this is, you're both getting in here right now and getting to work. And so, I'm in a committed relationship now. My boyfriend and I live together, and how he got me to move in with him, he said, "Hey, you move in with me and you will never wash a dish again." And I said, "Sold."
Did you hear that, boyfriends and husbands out there? That's ignoring me right
and
now.
And so we've been living together for about 6 months, and I have never used the dishwasher. So he's held up his end of the bargain. And I do the laundry. He does the dishes. And
can we rent him?
You can't. He will come cook for you. He's a chef, too. So, yeah, he cooks. But between us, we have 4 boys. So I am raising those boys to value strong, independent women. And I think that's how we change the landscape of our future. It's how we realize those cultural biases towards things and kind of eliminate those. Because, you know, one of the things that you asked me about was, you know, what do I think about STEM, right? So
I'm gonna slow your roll here. Okay. Let's take a step back for a sec, because you're like going. Based on your history and your experiences, let's talk about staying in your own lane. How many times in your shift in your career, as you've progressed or not progressed, have you seen, did you predict that you'd have to change lanes, if you will? Or there are times you had to force changing your lane because you went from being a receptionist, if you will, then you started shifting in towards the marketing side. Was it marketing side? And then you shifted towards sales ops. Did you recognize that you were making those decisions to move over, or were people pushing you towards those?
I never stay in my lane. I try to be running 2 or 3 lanes at once, so that way, if there's a roadblock over here, I can make a quick left. So,
did you consciously do that though?
I don't think so. I think it is just something innate within me, because I am too afraid to fail, so I always have backup plans. So there's a plan, then there's backup plan for the backup plan, and, you know, I'm going to be over-prepared, as you know.
You guys, 5 pages, like, literally, of, like, her typing, and I'm like, oh, why don't you just write a book? I think we should just publish
your
book. I think
you should write a book. No, I mean, because we haven't even gotten to the cancer part yet, but I think this is all intriguing of the, from Sia's point of changing lanes and being able to grab lanes. How about imposter syndrome? You're going into these jobs. Like, I mean, we've got entrepreneurs in here. We've got corporate people. I struggle. I could even have the check, every checkbox that I'm supposed to have checkbox, but I'll still be like, I don't think I should be doing that. Or I think I should be saying that. How did you get over imposter syndrome, or did you ever not have it?
I always have imposter syndrome. And in the role that I'm in now, there'll be people that I've known for a long time and people that I've just met call me and say, "Hey, we want you to be the executive sponsor on this account." And I'm kind of like, who's the executive? Is that me? Because you know, I'm just me. But right. Yeah, like that's okay. Yeah, I guess I am the executive sponsor. So, you know, I don't really ever think, and then, you know, I think I get imposter syndrome too when I'm in a room and I realize that everybody has stopped and they're just all looking at me.
Kind of like right now?
Oh my gosh. Like, okay. You know, you kind of have to just get a little bit of an out-of-body experience and just go, okay, I got this. And I'm going to ignore that in the room of everybody, you know, kind of focusing on what I'm saying. And really, that's why I'm so intentional about what I say, right? I try to be really intentional, because the more you move up in leadership positions, the more you realize that it's not one-on-one conversations that people remember of you, but it's all of you have formed an impression of me based on this one-to-many engagement mm-hmm. that we've had. And I may not talk to each one of you individually, but I'm trying to be very intentional in what I'm sharing with you, because I want to make sure that I make the right points. And so preparation is, to me, very important when you have an important meeting with an executive, really trying to net out what are the three things that I'm trying to get across. One of the tips that I'll give you that I do all the time, in fact, I met with the president of our division just last week, and I thought, okay, well, what do I want to say to him? Because I have 30 minutes scheduled, which means I'll probably get 10. And so I always take a piece of paper and I write down a triangle. And then in the center, I say to myself, okay, what's my main point that I want to get across? And then what are the three supporting points that I want to go to? And it doesn't matter what questions that I'm asked. These are my answers. Like, I'm going to find a way to weave it back around to the points I wanted to get across. Not that I'm not taking somebody's input, but I'm trying to, I came in there with a point of view on what I wanted to get. And these are the three points I wanted to get across. And I'm starting with those points, expanding on those points, and closing with those points so that I make sure that I'm communicating the right message when it's over.
That's very interesting. Do you feel like the way you did that was very intentional? You have a graph in your head. It's very visual. Women in general, and I'm going to make a generalization here, tend to do the details and they don't get to the point. They tend to try to evoke emotion before you can get there. How did you develop this triangle? Was it a training that you've got, or is it something that you just kept out of your own head?
No, I actually, Salesforce has a great training program, and I actually took a public speaking course, and that was my one takeaway. It's like the triangle is key to really getting your message across, because otherwise you just wander around. You know, you don't want to wander around when you're talking to an executive, because there's like an attention span of a gnat. Like there's so much information coming at you that you don't want them to pick up on and run with something that is a point that you don't want to get to. And if you wander, they'll pick up on something, because we're looking for problems, right? Okay, so I'm going to pick up on that, and then I'm going to run with it, and you're never getting back to your point. You know, so you're not going to get what you, because you've given me control of the agenda at that point, and you don't want to do that.
So being direct and succinct is so critical, and it's almost, you have to make your first point the point that action item that you want to take away, because it seems like my experience has been, I might have had three needs, and they pick up on that first one, and you're like, no, there's two more, but... Like yeah. You said, I guess I did not articulate how important that particular three points were.
Yeah.
That should have been my basis.
Yeah. That's why I always start out with, thank you for your time today. I would like to talk about this. And from that, A, B, and C, is that an okay agenda? Yes. And then they know that's what you want to talk about. And then just expand on those points and then close with those points. It's pretty simple.
So I really want to cover, there's a lot of areas, but I want to go into your growth mindset, because obviously you're very driven. There's something that maybe you weren't taught, but, or just isn't innate, but you talked about having the growth versus the fix, the Carol Dweck, like,
yep.
You know, I love corporate America. A lot of times I feel sometimes can foster the fixed. We get scared. We don't want to grow. It could harm us. How have you continued? And let me ask first, where did you get it from? And second, how have you continued to foster that growth mindset? Because I think it's huge. I mean, it doesn't seem like there's ever been anything in your way. You've just paved your own path.
Yeah. So I did read the book, first of all, okay, which was a great, was a really great parenting tip. Like, my parenting philosophy is based on that. I never tell my kids they're smart.
Yep.
I always say, oh, great, you worked hard on that. You worked hard on that. And my son has phonetic dyslexia. And so it was great to hear his teachers talk about how hard he's been working and his results. So, you know, I focus on working hard and I try to be very intentional in what I do. And that's being intentional in learning, because it's just like diet and exercise. You need to really nurture your mindset as well. So I try to be an avid reader. I don't have that much time for that anymore. So podcasts, audiobooks, things like that are, you know, and I'm fortunate to work around people that raise the bar. And I feel like there are just so many amazing, intelligent people that I work with. And so someone once told me, if I want to know who you are, then tell me who your two closest friends are and I'll meet them. And that tells me a lot about you. So I surround myself with people that have a growth mindset, and that keeps me on the right path.
I'm sorry. Did you take your two closest friends?
Yeah. Sorry.
They're going to think I'm schizophrenic, but that's okay. So on that note, though, so you talk about, okay, your closest friends or the company you keep gives a lot of, insight to who you are. So would you say your company has helped make you successful, or would you say you're very independent minded and your friendships have kind of pulled you along with you?
I think that there's two things that matter in the long-term success, right? A lot of people get out of college, maybe somebody that has a really talented mathematician or a really talented journalist. You get out and you can be the most talented, but the person with the perseverance and the will to really drive and move themselves forward, that matters more than talent. Because I don't really think I'm smarter than anybody else, but I've got a lot more grit. And I'm gonna keep whittling at it, and I'm gonna make it happen. And I'm not waiting on anybody to do it for me, and nobody handed it to me. You know, perseverance. It doesn't really like it. It will overtake intelligence every time.
That's so interesting. I just read an article about that. They're saying, I think Gary Vee actually talked about it as well. Is you can have the smartest person in a group, but if they are not a team player, they're toxic to the team, you gotta let them go. It's the ones that will just keep trudging along are the ones that will be the most successful, the ones that you want on your team.
Yeah.
Is that what you're looking for when you hire?
I'm looking for diversity when I hire. You know, I know how I think. You know, I want somebody that doesn't think like I do, and they're going to challenge me to be better. So, you know, I really look for people that, you know, how do I round out a team and surround myself with people that have all the skill sets that I'm not that good at, so that it really causes a little bit of tension that will drive, and then somebody will own this and somebody will own that. And that makes your job as a leader a lot easier when you have people that, you know, are sort of compensating for your weaknesses. I don't want a lot of people that are just like me, because that's not really going to be well-rounded.
It's probably not the most successful team either, right?
No, and I want to go back before we get into hiring, though. I want to talk about your grit, your perseverance, and your cancer diagnosis, because I think this is huge. And she's, Angela, we teased it a little bit, but you're a cancer survivor.
Yep.
You talking about grit, perseverance, getting through, I can only imagine you getting told you have cancer and your attitude is, I'm going to get through this. That may not have been how it was, but can you talk about that time? Because you were still working, you were still raising a family, you were still doing well in a leadership role. Can you talk about that time in your life and how you got through it? Because I think it's just so interesting how you approached it.
It was really a shock to the system, because, you know, it turns out that I had it for 5.5 years.
Whoa.
And I had two mammograms during that time, and they still didn't find it. And I went in there and I said, right here, there's a lump. And they said, I don't see anything on there. I was like, feel right here, there's a lump. And so I thought it was just a clogged mammary gland from nursing my babies. And so I really like was in denial that I actually had it, but turns out I did. It was stage two because it was such a slow growing cancer. But I was 90 days into being promoted to regional vice president in my new role. I had a 3-year-old and a 6-7-year-old at the time. So I had to figure out how to make it work. You know, I had worked to get myself into this position and I had small children. So I got really focused on what are the things that only I can do and how do I outsource the rest? I'm going to be there to snuggle with my kids every night. I am going to be there, you know, for their school activities. And I'm going to bring in a nanny to do the rest of the stuff. I got the online grocery shopping going, you know, all of those things that make your life easier. The weekly housekeeper instead of twice a week, that kind of stuff. And then having that network of trusted advisors at work. I mean, my team that I had just picked up needed to be completely rebuilt. And the region needed to be completely rebuilt. And here I was diagnosed with cancer. And I remember sharing this news with the extended leadership team. And they just automatically like wrote me off. Like, okay, yep, Angela's sick. We're not going to ask her to do anything. We're not going to put any pressure on her. We're not. And I was like, mm-mm. She told me I couldn't swear, but no.
You can swear. You can swear on that
I'll
one.
I'll beep you out. I'll beep you out, yeah.
And I was like, I am not accepting this. This is not like... I am not going to be treated like I'm a cripple because I'm going through something like this. I can get through this. Like I had a baby. I've worked 2 babies. I walked around in 6-inch heels at the time and I can do this. So I went to the store and with my aunt who, she had been a hairdresser for years and she showed me how to use wigs. I bought like 12 wigs. And then I went shopping and bought all kinds of clothes because, you know, as a girl, if you change your hair color, you got to change your outfit.
Yeah, so, makes a big difference.
Please clarify what you mean by you change your outfits, you need to change your hair, because exactly tell me how you matched things up.
Yeah, so like I had a silver wig, like the you know, like everybody where I went wearing this wig, they like I got rock star treatment with like the black rooted silver wig that was like all funky. And then I had silver shoes to match. So I like matched my hair to my shoes. And, you know, I would every time I went into a different meeting, I would wear a different wig and I would freak people out because no one would ever know it was me. Like I'd be turned around and they'd be like, oh, yeah, it's me. Yeah,
okay. So how did you handle hostile meetings?
Oh, when I had a hostile meeting, I decided that I loved going to meetings when I was pregnant because nobody could ever be mean to me. And I thought, well, how can I recreate that? And so when I had hostile meetings, I would wear no wig at all. And I would go in there like Susan Powder with like the little spiky hair and no wig. And it was like people like a little bit of shock and surprise, but no, it was very disarming. So I use that to really disarm people.
It kind of put their complaints into perspective.
Yeah.
100%.
Like, you're going to complain about that, but I have cancer.
You know, I think that's really funny that you told me that story because I was like, oh, you evil son of a gun. But but how awesome is it to leverage? And this is a bit of advice that I've given to folks that I've mentored over the years was, look, male or female, always leverage your strengths. Always put yourself in a position of strength whenever you're discussing things, et cetera. But don't rely on your strengths. So I used to tell women as they were coming up into their careers, I would say, look, you do have an advantage. There's no two ways about it. But, you know, work it, you know, but don't rely on it. Let's be clear on that. And so the fact that you're telling me about your wigs and stuff and the fact that you went without wig, I was like, damn, you took it to the next level.
Yeah, well, use what you got.
Oh, I get it. So, okay, let's talk about mentors and mentees. What's your viewpoint on mentorship versus sponsorship?
So I think there's a huge difference between a mentor and a sponsor. So I'll give you a story from just this last couple of weeks. So a few weeks ago, I saw a position that was open at Salesforce that was a couple levels above me. And I thought, you know, I'm probably not qualified for that, but I'm going to go ahead and shoot an email and say, hey, I'm interested. I didn't expect, you know, so I sent an email to our SVP and said, hey, should I apply for this job? And I thought he would come back and say, wait, you know, there's something else coming up, because, you know, I'd been talking to this group for a while. And he said, yeah, absolutely, you should apply for it. And so I ended up, me and one other girl ended up being the finalists for the position. And I didn't get it, and I didn't really expect to. But what I was trying to do was make sure I raised my profile and improved my brand along the way, so that I was getting exposure to executives and different leaders in the company that I didn't normally get exposure from. So I had a mentor that helped coach me through the process. And I had actually multiple mentors, really, that, how do I do this? What do you think about that? Let me get your input here. And then I had a sponsor that made the call for me and said, hey, yeah, she's really great, you should take her. And I didn't get the job, but the person who was the hiring manager, I guess not technically not the hiring manager, but made a call over to the senior leader in my division and said, hey, I know we didn't take Angela for that job, but I want you to immediately move her over. And so they created a role for me. Wow. And moved me onto the team to run some of the strategic accounts here locally. So I think that's the difference between a mentor and a sponsor, is like, mentor is going to teach you and show you and help you with the ropes. Sponsor is the one that's going to fight for you in the room when you're not there.
And that's awesome. And I think everyone in the room, I think we all understand. Although I used to fight it at the time when I used to be earlier on in my career, is, oh, do I really need a mentor? Do I really need to talk to someone about things? It sounds like bitching. Oh, I used a bad word.
It's okay.
It sounds like whining. And but I think a true mentorship is to have the ability to have that conversation of, yeah, there are times you're going to whine, but you all, as a mentor, kind of correct the course, right? Yeah. Or maybe give them that moment of having an emotional burst, but then what's your action item afterwards, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, really the moral of the story that I just mentioned is that, you know, your career trajectory is not a ladder. It's more of a jungle gym. And so I'm moving over into this position, and it's a lateral move for me. It's not a promotion. But this team begged me 2 years ago to take the job. And now, because I think success, where I've seen success in my career and where I have seen, I don't want to call it failure, but learning opportunities, is when I did not trust my gut. And I think as women, we try too hard to please people instead of listening to our inner voice and what it is that we know we're good at and what we want, what we need. We're always putting other people's needs first. So I stayed in the role that I had because I didn't want to let anybody down. But now I'm working for the person who took the job that, and I really respect this person and he's amazing. There's just that little bit of, you know, yeah, I kind of messed up by not just listening to myself and listening to my gut. And that's, yeah, and so I'm happy to be moving over, and I know I'm going to make the best out of it and do some really great things. And the boss that I'm going to have, he really is amazing and he'll be a great partner for me. But had I chosen a different path and listened to my gut, I probably would be in a different spot now.
So if I could kind of like summarize what I'm understanding based on our conversation here. So in the very beginning, we talked about your background, and you've been able to adjust yourself. So one thing that I'm taking away here, early on in your life and career, you're a bit of a chameleon and you understood opportunity and you took advantage as it presented itself. So you didn't swim in your own lane. You had multiple lanes that you were swimming in, and you hedged your bets to see what one is going to best work out for you. And you were able to turn at any given point in time. And as we fast forward progression of your career, you had an amazing woman, Debbie, that you had mentioned earlier, that kind of guided you along and pushed you along. You had the experience of working at an organization that went IPO. Then you went to a startup that failed. So you saw failure. moved on, and you know, Salesforce has been very good to you, and you progressed, you know, again, different types of positions. Then cancer struck, and then you overcame that. So if I were to summarize everything that I'm hearing from you right now, is your career is not a career ladder, but more of like a career jungle gym.
Yes. I just think you have to be able to move left and move right and jump up, because that's what makes you more well-rounded. As always, I think this brings us to a point that I know you wanted to cover, is my perspective on STEM. My perspective on STEM is that, you know, we talked a little bit about the cultural, you know, upbringing and differences like that. So I'm gonna walk back, and then we'll get back to your point here. I avoided every math class growing up. It wasn't something that was focused. I joke about, hey, my math skills were only needed at the church bake sale, and you know, I don't do those anymore. So, but my son, my oldest son, is pace math, and he's like amazing at math. And so I wonder if I had been raised in a situation where that was emphasized, if I really would have been good at math. So I don't know if it's nature or nurture. So I think we need to encourage our daughters, our, you know, our nieces and nephews, really, to be involved in STEM and to learn that. But ultimately, what you've got to figure out is what it is that you're really good at, and do things that accentuate those strengths. We should expose our daughters to STEM, but that's not, like, men have a lot of innate qualities that make them really good, but women have a lot of innate qualities that make them really great leaders too. And I think one of our leadership unique qualities is we're really collaborative and good communicators. And I think as I look to the future, what I'm going to be doing is taking my son, who's really great at math, and teaching him how to collaborate and communicate. Because it's not really a men versus women thing. It's a us thing. And we each need to play to our strengths if we're going to win the game.
So let me ask you this quick, too. I know I want to open it up for Q&A, but speaking of leadership, and that was one great point, what are some things, based on what you've learned in corporate America, that you teach your kids now about leadership? Besides just going to strengths, what are some other things that you teach about leadership, or things you've learned about leadership?
You know, what I really teach is, you know, working hard at whatever it is that you're doing, always do your best at it. Sorry, that is actually my phone.
Oh, okay.
Turn it off. Yeah.
Right. Who's that rude person? Rude.
It's probably my son.
He probably heard you talking about him. He's like,
yeah.
Yeah, he's probably FaceTiming right now.
It's on Alexa right now, because Alexa's listening to us anyway.
Yeah. So, sorry about that.
No, that's okay, but leadership. Work hard. Anything else about leadership that you teach or that you've learned?
You know, I think that really it's having... I mean, I call it my personal board of directors, but I have a lot of different people in my network that I rely on to bounce ideas off of, and should I do this and should I do that? And what do you think about this? And, you know, what books have you read? And, you know, really that network, who you surround yourself with, and that network, use it to check yourself and move up. And for those of you who are early on in your career, that network that you start now, is going to make a difference. Like, what you do right now today is going to make a difference. I was at the airport a couple weeks ago at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I ran into this guy that I work with at Salesforce. I worked with him when I was receptionist 20 years ago.
Wow. That's awesome.
And we sat down and we had breakfast, and we were kind of talking things through, and he was like, I always love talking to you because you have the best stories. And I was like, and you know all of them because you've known me for 20 years.
Because he was with you right there.
You were there
watching.
And he said, yep. And you've been a force to be reckoned with since then. So, you know, those types of relationships that you're building now early on in your career, I think are something that's going to stick with people, and you never know where you're going to run into someone. So you never want to burn a bridge. And
I mean, great. That's great information. Thank you.
Okay. But you have to admit, I know we're running out of time, but you have to admit, how many times in your career where you're like, how badly do I want to climb this jungle gym? But there are certain individuals where you're just like, I just want to just light a fire right there. And it's okay if I just burn that segment of the jungle gym. Have you ever encountered that? Or did you maturely just grow?
I really just try to keep myself above the fray.
You're so mature.
Mental note, don't make Sia mad and then climb above her on a jungle gym or climb below her on a jungle gym.
Just dodge me.
Yeah, I mean, there's always people that, you know, that either you don't like or they don't like you. I try to befriend those people. I try to make them mentors and advisors, and because they're obviously passionate about me in a positive or negative way. So that might be a good mentor.
That's a good bit of advice.
You know, like, what? Yeah. Hey, why don't everybody likes me? Why don't you like me? What did I do wrong?
Like me, golly gosh darn it. So on that note, oh my gosh, Angela, you know what? We really appreciate your time with us. Guys, give Angela a big round of applause. Any last words, Angela?
Just thank you very much for your time today and for putting this together. I think it's a really great thing that you guys are doing. And I hope everybody gets value out of this and remembers that have a growth mindset. It's not a ladder. It's a jungle gym. So keep climbing.
Excellent. Aaron, last thoughts?
No, just anywhere. If someone wanted to reach you, is there anywhere they could reach you or just salesforce.com? I know this is kind of a weirder question.
Find me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. And we'll have that on our notes page at innovationcalling.com.
Excellent. So that wraps up another live recording of the Women in Technology event. Everyone, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you.